Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com.
You know, I had an uncle, Cyrus. He had this little yellow bird. He would go everywhere with him. And he'd get out this box filled with colorful papers. On each of them was a riddle. And the bird would hop off and go into the box and pull out one of the papers with its beak. Whatever it chose, that was the riddle meant for us. The bird always knew somehow. When Iraq invaded, he was conscripted, sent to fight in a war he knew nothing about and had nothing to do with. I remember the morning he left. The sun hadn't even come up yet. That was dying for nothing.
Hey, Zedheads. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Ben.
And I'm Alex.
And this is The Cast of Us, episode 652.
And this episode, we're covering The Walking Dead, Dead City, season 2, episode 5, The Bird Always Knows.
So, first things first, we have to do a little bit of an apology.
For
sure. Because as we posted online, we're doing a double dose of episodes this week. We're going to bring you two episodes covering episodes 4 and 5. Alex and I had just schedules that kind of clashed this week.
Yeah.
You were away on a work trip and we made the attempt to record, but apparently at Universal Resorts Wi-Fi just wasn't up to snuff to do it.
We talked about this before we started recording. How hotels do not have hard-lined Ethernet in every room is beyond me. Why in 2025 do I have to rely on their wireless internet? It's beyond me. Beyond me.
I know. And it's so, I mean, even because you stayed, here's the bragging moment. You stayed at Universal Resorts. I stayed at an Omni Hotel. It was, you know, like, we stayed at high-end hotels this weekend, right, for both of our individual trips. And you're right. No hard-line internet. Everything is Wi-Fi. And the Omni in Providence, Rhode Island, because I was there for Rhode Island Anime Con this weekend, which is why we're doing two episodes this week, is the number of times I tried to connect to the room Wi-Fi, and it kept connecting me to the free Wi-Fi down in the lobby. I'm like, I'm on the 10th floor.
Oh, my God.
Stop it. Like, it's weak from up here.
Oh, it was chaotic. So, listeners, I want you to know I've been a listener to these shows for years, and I always hate it deep down in my soul when a week is missed. So I feel your pain, and I'm sorry. And we wanted to bring you the best possible show, and we're going to do that this week. So thanks for sticking in with us.
Yep. Yeah. So as we said online, we're going to give you coverage of episode 5 this week with your episode 4 feedback. And then tomorrow we're going to be recording our episode 6 coverage with our episode 5 feedback. So we're giving you back to back episodes. And then Jason's going to top it off at the end of the week with Karen returning to talk about 28 Days Later.
It's Christmas in June.
I'm excited for that because I I like those movies. I'm a fan of those movies. I'm going to see a screening of 28 Years Later, which I'm excited for next week. But I love, and all the love to Jason for this, when he asked for feedback for the 28 Days Later coverage, he's like, and please give me something as, other than whether or not it's a zombie movie. Because I feel like I'm the one to blame for that.
Oh.
Because I am the one who debates hard that they are not zombie movies.
Is The Last of Us a zombie show?
No.
Okay, all right. Then you are at least consistent, and I appreciate that. Because I also don't think The Last of Us is a zombie show. It's an infected show. But it's not a zombie show. Those are not zombies. Those are infecteds.
As is 28 days, months,
years.
And maybe years later. I don't know. It could have... Maybe 28 years later will change my mind about all of this,
we'll
but we shall see. But as of 28, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on this. We're going to get to the feedback. 28 days and 28 months later, or 28 weeks later, to me, are infected movies, not zombie movies. It is a rage virus. It is not a zombie infection.
Yes.
But I digress. We're not going to get into that.
I'm here.
Good. I'm glad you at least see that I'm consistent in my beliefs.
I appreciate it. I really did. All right. So we're doing feedback for episode 4. What happened in episode 4 again? That's where we were really introduced to Bruegel, and Maggie and crew were going through the tall grass in Central Park, right?
Yep. And okay. we met
Roxana and her people.
Yes. Roxana. Mm-hmm. Yes, we met Roxana and the nature people, and we found that Maggie and Pearly and Lucia all took shelter with them as they were being, you know, finding a place to be in the woods. And we also found out this was also the same episode where Negan went into the tall grass to look for them. And had the one-on-one confrontation with the face-to-face confrontation with Herschel.
Wait, actually, I think that was the previous episode. I think this is the episode at Bruegel's where Negan figures out that his prize fighter is a person.
You are absolutely right. Jesus.
Okay. See, this is why we can't take a week off. Because
you're right.
And the feedback thing really does start to get like a Dan Harmon episode of Rick and Morty, man. The timeline is all messy.
Yeah, you're right. This is what happens when we miss a week. We're all out of sorts. Apologies to the listeners. They're probably listening like, if I had hair, I'd pull it out.
It's 100%. 100%.
No, you're right. This is where the Washington crossing the Delaware got burned.
Yes, you are
absolutely right. And we found out that Bruegel's champion was an actual human being.
And Navarez kind of got Ginny in the hole. So, Negan, what up? And we didn't know how that... Okay, cool. All right, folks. Glad that we're all on the same page finally.
See, this is what would happen. Like, what would I have done if I didn't have you as a co-host for this one? Like, and it was just me. We'd be so lost.
I would be one of those listeners yelling at my my phone right now.
your MP3.
I'm yelling at my Zune. I'm like, damn you, Bill Gates. Why doesn't your wheel scroll?
Damn it, I got to click back on my iPod a minute.
My
disc man skipped.
You know what's funny? Karen and I were just talking about that yesterday. And I am firmly, firmly convinced the CDs are going to have a comeback just like vinyl did. Give it 10 more years. CDs are coming back, Ben. Mark my words, 2035 compact discs. They're coming back. Them and Jenko jeans.
No, they're not. Next thing you know, you're going to tell me Laserdisc and 8-track are coming back too.
Laserdisc and 8-track never really had a moment. Cassette and DVD blew them out of the water, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Episode 4.
Thank you.
Feedback. First one comes in from Adam Buckley. In regards to your discussion about the long grass scene, yes, I thought Jurassic Park, but I think it was more like Indiana Jones' Crystal Skull, where they were walking through long grass and the little cannibals, Uha, were taking them.
I could see that. My mind doesn't, when it comes to Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, my mind doesn't go to that long grass. Mine goes to
the fridge.
Shia LaBeouf, aka Mud, swinging on vines with monkeys.
Sure.
Which is one scene in that movie your brain really shouldn't go to because it's a scene that really ruins that movie.
Is swinging with monkeys the new jumping the shark?
It's a total euphemism. Yeah.
All right. I like it.
It's, look, I enjoyed Crystal Skull for what it was. It's the least of it's the least likable of that entire franchise.
Can I admit a long lost secret to all of our listeners, which is just, you know, a couple people? I've never seen a single Indiana Jones.
And you just heard it officially, folks. This is the last episode that Alex will be joining me for this podcast.
There are certain prestige movies and franchises I've just, for whatever reason, it's never happened. The Godfather, never seen a single one. Scarface, Goodfellas, none of it. I've seen Boondock Saints 100 times, but that's because I'm Irish.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I've seen Boondock Saints a bunch of times, too.
I have not seen some fantastic movies.
Okay. No. I'm gonna. I know we're getting off track again, but look, we missed a week, guys.
We got one feedback in so far.
Have you seen The Shawshank Redemption?
Oh my gosh, yes. One of my top three all-time favorite
movies. It is number one on my list of favorite movies of all time.
I don't think I can do a number one, but it's right up there.
Well, that sounds like it needs medication.
Narrow your urethra, Bobby.
Sorry. Sorry, folks. All right. We're going to continue on with the feedback.
You're up, Andy Fisher. Go.
Our next piece comes from Andy Fisher. Andy says, I love that The Walking Dead is touring the world. Georgia, D.C., France, New York, etc. The only other zombie movie set in New York City, I believe, is I Am Zombie. Nope. I Am Legend, which I also actually believe is not a
Pretty
zombie
sure they're
movie.
Infected.
They're infected, and they're more vampire than they are zombie. But anyway, sure. I digress. If you think it's a zombie movie, it's a zombie movie. I love watching Maggie and Negan, and the art critic is fantastic, but I'm not buying any of the supporting characters. They seem to be coming out of a bad version of Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, and I'm missing some of the logic here. All of this is to get Walking Dead energy to power vehicles. How does the CRM fit into this? I miss the urgency and desperation of the better seasons of The Walking Dead. I think they're trying to strike a mysterious tone with Herschel, but it doesn't ring true to me. Thank you for the great podcast, followed by 5 pizza emojis and a ring.
I don't understand the hieroglyphics at the end of the statement, but I appreciate them for being there.
Yeah, me too.
One of the things I gotta challenge you on, Andy, is why does the CRM have to fit into this? I guess is where I'm like, I don't see any reason for the CRM to be a part of this storyline. And I'm just curious as to why you expected it to, when it did not play a part at all last season. And I kind of feel like with The Ones Who Live, they almost not necessarily tied up the CRM, but they kind of tied up the CRM.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and not only that, but if you look at, you know, making a comparison to The Last of Us with the wolves and such, like the wolves are isolated to one particular area. It's not just because you see the CRM in one area of the country doesn't mean they're everywhere in the country. Right. And when you look at a place like New York City and Manhattan, when it comes to retaking the world or reestablishing the world, Manhattan is a pretty intimidating place to do it. It's one of the reasons why we're getting that Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome post, you know, feeling that we're getting for the show, as you mentioned, Andy, is because
it's isolated. Like,
it's isolated. It's so huge that it would take a lot of resources to completely restore a place that big. And even, I don't even think it's something that the CRM even has the ability to do. So I can absolutely see the CRM being like, you know what? We know New York is there. We'll get to that down the road.
Yep. And just saying, screw it. Let Manhattan take care of itself. And we'll pick up the pieces when they're just the undead at that point.
Yeah. You start smaller and you get gradually and you expand. They haven't yet gotten to New York at this point, if they ever would.
We probably won't find out, but
no,
that's for another episode. Next up, we have feedback from Deborah Ulmer. Hi, Ben and Alex. To answer your question about who will take down Navarez, I'm rooting for Maggie, but Pearlie is a good choice too. I think the Croat might ultimately be the one to do it. However, I'd love to see Navarez taken out by the methane, as you both mentioned. Her next move is bound to backfire, and I hope Ginny doesn't get caught in the crossfire. It's no surprise to me that Ginny has a gun to exact revenge on Negan. And if you believe her or not, it's interesting to note that she and Herschel share a common goal. I enjoyed seeing Maggie and Pearly bond, and it was great that Herschel was there to experience it too. Although he's being misled by the Dhamma, his statement about rebuilding the old world has some merit. Throughout the episode, it was difficult to gauge how brainwashed Herschel is, but I still believe he's not completely gone. Maggie and Negan's meeting was surprising. I didn't expect them to be so open with each other. I hope Maggie takes Negan's warning about Herschel to heart, as I think she secretly knows on the inside and believes it too. I'm enjoying the diplomatic tour of the factions. I felt tense during the museum scenes, not knowing what everybody else's moves and reactions would be. We also learned that the Dhamma has been ruthless even before the zombie apocalypse. She's over here biting ears off, LOL. Negan saved the day, earning a small victory, but it's clear that the Croat is getting uneasy about Negan's growing influence over the Dhamma. I'm excited to see what happens when they visit Christos's group. Take care.
Well, there's a lot you're going to be...
Yeah, buckle up.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about very soon.
Can't wait.
When it comes to... a lot of that.
Don't you worry, Deborah. We're getting there. I promise.
Yeah. Next up comes a piece of feedback from Robin Springer. I'm behind, so hopefully I make the cutoff for feedback.
Oh, you sure did.
Sorry, that just threw me. That came out of nowhere. Loved Kim Coates chewing up the scenery. I most recently saw him in American Primeval, in which he plays a very ruthless Brigham Young, and before that, a corrupt Pinkerton type guy in Godless. He's always good. Yes, he is. Mm-hmm. Is Bruegel going to be a problem? Mm-hmm. I see him double crossing the Dhamma somehow. Was he a savior type of leader at one point? And the reveal of Tony. It's kind of hard to believe nobody wondered about or questioned the way he moved in the Walker fights. And then he looked straight into Negan's eyes. Negan always lucks out and gets the upper hand somehow. Oh my God, the rats for lunch. I was wrong about the Dhamma being a star, but in the art theater world, the critics are a different kind of star and wield a lot of power. I talked about that last week. And we had Chekhov's bite. Who will she bite in an upcoming episode? We'll get an answer to that this week, too. Mm-hmm. I loved the scene with Pearly, Maggie, and Herschel in the park reminiscing about jelly donuts and Kit Kat bars. The look on Herschel's face when Maggie started to tell a happy memory, he wanted so badly to hear it and was crestfallen when she didn't tell it. Maggie clearly hasn't shared many happy memories with him, and I'm sure he knows next to nothing about Glenn. Such a shame. He needs that. Ginny is annoying me so much.
Amen,
almost, sister. Almost as much as Navarez. I'll be interesting to hear what y'all have to say about the episode. I love the fact that everybody's calling her Navarez. It's Narvaez, not Navarez.
That's definitely my fault. I am sure I have been mispronouncing it from the get-go.
And now you understand why for the past couple episodes I've been calling her Lucia.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter anymore.
No, you're right. Well, we're going to need her name this week for a little bit.
20 minutes.
Narvaez, it's everybody knows who we're talking about, so yeah. It's fine.
Robin, that was one of the best pieces of feedback. When you went into the conversation with Maggie almost telling a happy memory with Glenn and the look of anticipation on Herschel's face, you're so right. And I noticed something, but I couldn't quite put words to it. So thank you for doing that, because he really did have that longing desire to hear a good memory about his father. Cause I bet it's always been too difficult and too painful for Maggie to talk about Glenn that Herschel probably knows nothing about his dad. So yeah. great pickup. That was awesome.
Yeah. Agreed.
Next up, we have an email from Colin Stillwell. Fun fact, I rewatched Fear the Walking Dead recently, and it now ranks higher on my list of spinoffs.
Oh, Jesus.
I know, right? It went from number 4 to, Becky guessed it, number 1 due to one interesting fact. Since Fear the Walking Dead has come to Netflix as a whole series, they snuck in many, many more F-bombs. I'll tell you the same as I tell anyone to watch anything The Walking Dead universe. 1 through 3 are great. 4 and 5 are okay. And 6 is when you should buckle your britches for a shit-stained log ride. Anyway, on this episode, I really enjoyed the alliterativeness there. Yeah. Anyways, on to episode 4, Feisty Friendly. Maggie is the type of parent that'll watch Herschel light cats on fire and tell everyone it's just... Sorry, let me try that again because it's so good. Maggie is the type of parent that'll watch Herschel light cats on fire, then tell everyone it's just a phase he's going through. Kim Coates is killing it as your typical mustache-meddling madman. Brogle, as I like to call him, clocked me as a stage performer. Knows how to manipulate, but isn't great at keeping up with the times. I knew that big-ass Walker was just someone cosplaying as Michael Berryman. Big Time Tony was adorable. Too bad he couldn't watch his ass. There's some weird chemistry between Adama and Herschel. She's too old for you, bro. It's baffling how much I respected Lucia. There you go. More than Maggie in this episode. I'm an anti-Maggie fan, in case that wasn't already obvious. Would you look at the time? I'm out. Peace and love, y'all. Thank you. So, Colin, here's the funny thing. I read this feedback at least six times in the last week and a half since Ben sent it to me. I have never laughed out loud until I had to do it out loud. And I want to thank you because now I understand how Pedro Pascal completely broke during the Community episode during the COVID when he was filling in for Walton Goggins. I couldn't understand. Like, you already read it. How is that so funny? But once you're actually saying the joke out loud, it's 10 times funnier. Thank you so much, Colin.
Yeah. The type of parent that'll watch Herschel light cats on fire.
Just he's so right. And that's the exact problem I have with what Maggie's been doing. Like, yeah. Yes, she will watch him light cats on fire and then say it's just a phase.
It's just a phase.
That was amazing.
He'll get through it. It's just a phase.
Oh, I love it.
Thank you for that, Colin. That was great. It was Colin and Brogle too. I kind of
that
like
was
that.
Phenomenal.
Yep. But we now have two voicemails this week. The first one comes from Kat from New Jersey. And I think this is actually feedback from a couple episodes ago, but we just received it recently. So
timeline is what it is this week, Ben.
I know we're all, it's this is like multiversal timeline at this point. But here we go. Here is our voicemail from Kat.
Hi guys. This is Kat from New Jersey. And I just wanted to give you an observation I had about Dead City. I was wondering why the Dama killed Victor, because Victor was so talented. And I'm guessing in this part of the zombie apocalypse, there's probably not that many classically trained musicians of any type anywhere in the world. And yet she killed him. She disposed of him, I think, not only to punish Negan and put Negan in his place, but also I think it's part of her agenda for her new world order to just get rid of the past, burn it all away, and start something fresh and new. And she gets rid of Victor and she takes Herschel on. And I think in Herschel, he's not trained. He is completely artistic, totally naturally talented. And she can see that he has this unbridled vision. He doesn't know the past. He has no rules for even how to do his art. He's doing it by natural instinct. So I think she sees in him the potential to create a new world, a new vision, totally eradicate the past. It has nothing to do with it. And I think that's one of the reasons why she got rid of Victor, was to just completely get rid of that history. Tragic as it is. Anyway, love you guys. I listen to a lot of the Podcastica shows. I also check out Chris and Jason over at The Talking Dead. And thank you for making my day. Bye.
Hey, thanks, Kat. Yeah, I mean, I could see that too. We talked a little bit about that before, that Herschel is like, he is moldable clay.
For sure.
To the Dama. Like it's a little bit of a double-edged sword. He's moldable, meaning she can form him to whatever she wants her vision of the future to be, but he's also impressionable.
Yes.
If that makes sense as well. Like she sees him as gullible enough to believe what she wants the future to be, because he doesn't have an indication of the end.
Well, I think she sees the brokenness in him a little bit. She sees that he is not just moldable and manipulatable, but also looking for something he's not getting. Is that a maternal figure? Is that unconditional love? Is that acceptance? It's hard to tell, but she knows that she has a way to get her tentacles in, and she does. The end game, you know, maybe we'll find out what it is. Maybe we won't. But it's very, yeah, the Dama Herschel relationship is phenomenal and fantastic.
Yeah. As for the Victor element of it all, I don't know if I necessarily agree with she killed Victor to get rid of that past. I still think power. I still think that was more of a power move to show Negan.
Yes, who's that?
Exactly. That, yep. Like, she saw the connection that Negan and Victor had established with each other, and she wanted to destroy that for the sake of showing Negan that she had power.
Yep.
And power over him.
Mission accomplished in the moment.
Yep. It just happened to be at the cost of history and art.
Absolutely.
So, but no, thank you, Kat, of course, for the opinion and for the voicemail. Mm-hmm. Which leads us to, of course, a voicemail from our good friend buddy, Steve Brown.
Hello, the cast of us. This is Steve, and this is going to be for The Walking Dead, Dead City, Feisty Friendly Feisty, what? Oh, good, we get to see some of our supporting characters finally again. Oh, Benjamin's in the trunk. Oh, looks like Negan is back to carrying Lucille 2.0, so this is going to be a performance here, right? Oh, that's kind of ingenious, using the mirrors to help reflect the light so you have more light inside the... That's it. Kim Coates, Edgar Allan Poe-looking guy. I love him. He's great. Oh, so Pearly and Maggie and Herschel come up with a plan to do an actual recon mission with a small group. Huh. That's great, Negan. I'm a movie poster kind of guy, too. That I'm comparing myself with Negan and all, but... Oh, are they posing that Negan's going to fight this gladiator-style guy? Oh, and Kim Coates just said Feisty Friendly, the title of the episode. Mic drop. Wow, Herschel, yeah, wouldn't know what a fire alarm is. Maggie and Pearly bonding over Kit Kat jingle. So, are Maggie, Herschel, and Pearly still in the park? Wow, this very Middle Ages gladiator-on-gladiator, walker-on-walker battle, I guess, huh? Oh, Ben, you kind of called it. She was, the Dama was somebody important, but she wasn't an actress. She was a critic. Okay, and it's confirmed that Herschel sent the smoke signal. And Jenny reveals that she's there to kill the man who killed her father. That's Negan, right? And Nieves suspects that Negan is alive because she just said so to Jenny. Oh, that walker's eating that other walker. So Brugel is juicing his walker champion, and now Negan is proposing a battle. Okay, so what is Negan going to do with this walker and this thing of gasoline? Oh, Maggie's using the old Savior's whistle to sound out Negan. And Negan's now telling Maggie that Herschel is the one who's the traitor. Why are you sticking around, Maggie? This is not a good idea. So what did Negan whisper in this guy's ear? Wait, so the champion that was fighting like a walker is actually this Tony guy who's alive? I don't understand. Now Brugel just killed him. Hey, I'm going to have to wait till I can listen to your podcast and understand. Maybe I have to watch this one again.
I feel like we probably did explain that in the episode. Steve, I love you. And Edgar Allan Coates is one of my favorite things I've ever heard in my entire life. So thank you.
I love it. Because he does. It's I didn't great. Even really think
it's
about
perfect.
That.
It's perfect. It's Edgar Allan Coates. That's who he is. Yeah. I love it. I love it to pieces. And yeah, you know what? That dude is writing The Raven. Like, when I think of what Edgar Allan Poe is probably like, it's Kim Coates' character in this show. It's phenomenal.
That's what I mean. Like, I don't know if I could see him now without thinking Edgar Allan Poe.
That's why Edgar Allan Coates, Until the Day I Die.
It's great.
That's why we love Steve.
Yeah. But thank you for that, Steve, as always, for the feedback. I want to preface, too, before we're going to go into season 2, episode 5 now, and... because we're recording this late and we're doing back to back, episode 6 has already aired. I know you have. I have not watched it yet. I purposely waited. I wanted to wait until we did our coverage of this because I didn't want anything kind of affecting my thoughts on this episode or anything we've talked about before. So I have purposely not watched episode 6 yet. I will, of course, have watched it by tomorrow by the time we record for episode 6. But
so
I haven't watched it yet.
I totally forgot, and I was a fan before a content producer, and that's why I watched the episode, because it was available, and I was like, hell yeah. Plus, I have the kids, so like, I don't know when I'm going to be able to watch The Walking Dead. Yeah. But I'm 87% sure I will be able to separate the two episodes mentally when we do this conversation. And guys, if I fail, my bad, but I'm feeling pretty confident I can pull this one off.
87% sure.
87% okay. Sure. I didn't want to be too cocky and get all up in the 90s. Like, it's a solid B+. Okay. And B's get degrees and I'm here for it.
All right, that's beasts that get degrees. Man, there are so many things coming out of this episode.
At my state school, C's get degrees, and that's why I have a degree in psychology.
There are so... Jesus. Can you tell, ladies and gentlemen, that we've been away for over a week?
You've missed us, don't lie.
It's I feel like we're loopy. I don't know what it is. I'm still tired from the weekend. I don't know about you.
I stayed into the same time zone, yet somehow I feel jet lagged. It's the craziest thing.
Yep. I don't get it. But anyway, let's get into this week's coverage. The Walking Dead, Dead City, Season 2, Episode 5, The Bird Always Knows. Plot summary for this episode. Negan's attempt to broker peace with Christos unravels when the Croat sabotages the meeting, leading to a deadly ambush. Meanwhile, Maggie narrowly escapes execution during a walker attack in Central Park. Tensions explode as the Croat betrays the Dama, leaving their alliance in ashes and shifting the power balance in Manhattan. Before we go any further, I'm going to urge listeners to stay all the way to the end of the podcast for an outtake of this podcast in which I totally screwed that all up before and had to redo it. So we're going to
love it.
I'm going to throw it at the end for an outtake.
Very nice.
I very rarely ever edit things out of episodes.
That's true. This is the first time you and I have ever podcasted together that you've ever had to edit something out.
I was like, I screwed it up so bad that I was like, no, this is getting edited out.
I tried to make a content for as long as I could, but
I appreciate that. Listen all the way past the end music and I'll throw it in at the end if you want to. You'll get a kick out of it if you listen to it. Okay, so
this was a table resetting episode. Like, holy shnikes.
It really was. And it kind of, I mean, we're in the back half of the episode of the season now with episode 5, because it's an 8 episode season. Mm-hmm. Episode 5, now we're into the back half of it. And it definitely felt that way with this episode, because we lose a bunch of characters.
A lot of names.
And it seems like they're kind of trimming the fat of this season to leave us with the meaty parts going into the end.
Which I agree emphatically. That's exactly what's happening. But as a viewer, I kind of feel, I don't know, I feel a little bit angry or irritated that they made me sit through 4 or 5 episodes of Navarez, whatever her name is. And just why did we bring so much of this in just to scrap it? Like, did they get through season 1 and realize, you know what, the Dama isn't working. You know what? Like, we got to get rid of, like, I feel like we wasted so much time and so much character development just to scrap them all for nothing.
I agree with you. And I know we've been getting a lot of feedback from people, and we've heard from people, even not through feedback, but just talking to them directly, of people who are kind of losing connection with this season. They're kind of feeling a lot of late season Fear the Walking Dead vibes when it comes to it. And I'm not going to lie, as much as I'm still a fan of this show and I'm enjoying podcasting on it, I kind of understood it more this episode.
Absolutely, yes. It was really like, well, then what the hell have we been doing the last 5 episodes? Is what I walked away feeling like, well, what? Okay, why did any of that matter ever?
Yeah. And Lucia is the biggest element of that. Like, the Dama is one thing, and we'll get into that. But Lucia is a character who, okay, you brought her in. You gave her tension between her and Pearlie. You gave her tension between her and Maggie. She made an alliance with Ginny. She's dead set on getting this methane one way or another. And you bring her in, she survives the boat attack when you could have taken her out then if you really wanted to get rid of this character, just like you did the governor that was with
them. I would have rather stuck with the governor than Narvaez.
Yeah, I agree with you. But again, you build up these tension with all these different characters and you give her this dead set, mindless, narrow-minded goal of, I need to get the methane. And we predicted throughout the first 4 episodes of, maybe Maggie will take her out because of Herschel. Maybe Pearlie will take her out because they're getting at it. Maybe she'll get taken out by the methane. Like, her narrow-minded goal is what takes her out in the end. No, she gets bit by a fucking walker.
Can I,
like, I, sorry for my language too.
No, but like, I hear your frustration, and I think that's exactly what my same problem is with Ginny this season, and a lot of characters. It's, oh, you have the opportunity to make a complex decision, and instead you're going to go with the simplest, dumbest decision ever. This whole Ginny arc in this episode really irritated me, and I agree. Having her, were they trying to be cute, having it be Roxana's Roxana's zombie that took out Narvaez? Because it wasn't cute. It was irritating. It was stupid. It was frustrating because it also wasn't compelling. The way was built up as a character, really, she wouldn't fight off an ambling, shambling walker, not even a little bit. She would just let herself get bit. I felt very like, all right, I'm not an idiot as a viewer. You guys can try a little bit harder here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I just mentioned how, like, the methane, like, making the methane the thing that takes her out. Like, you know, you're going after the methane, but you mishandled it properly, and there's a methane explosion, and she dies in it. Mm-hmm. That's, I would have bought that totally.
I love that.
She would have deserved that. And yes, in the end, having Roxana be the one to bite her when she's the one that was responsible for Roxana's death is kind of the same thing, but that felt so forced and contrived.
Yes.
Because it's something that happened in a matter of two episodes, where for three episodes before that, you've been building this whole methane thing.
Mm-hmm.
You've been building the methane goal, the dynamic between her and Maggie, and the dynamic between her and Pearly, yep, for five episodes. But you use something that you just set up the episode before as her downfall? Like...
You're so right. There were so many compelling options. Hell, Herschel would have been a great person to take her down. And like
protecting Maggie.
Abso-flippin'. Or Ginny realizing like, oh crap, I picked the wrong side. But no, it was a dumb, we're trying to be cute here storytelling methodology. And it was irritating. But I will say, having knowledge of the future, we're good. Like we're good.
Okay.
We're good.
Okay.
We're good. Like, stick with it. We got rid of a lot of annoying pieces, and that actually helps the show flourish from here. So,
well, and that's why I said in the beginning of this discussion that it feels more like trimming the fat and leaving us with the meaty elements.
Absolutely.
I feel like we're getting a tonal shift now. Like we've eliminated Lucia, who they were forming as a antagonist against everybody. We had the Dama, who we end up losing. That kind of surprised me.
That Lucia shocked the hell out of me. No,
yeah.
Narvaez, we're going to say the different name all episode, and I'm okay with that. But that didn't shock. Dama shocked me.
Yeah, I didn't expect that. I expected it to happen, expect it to happen in episode five.
No. No,
I thought that was like a penultimate season finale kind of thing.
That had big implications written all over it, and this was not really a big implication. This was just another episode. What? All right. So, speaking of folks that are off the chessboard, I really hated how they handled Christos this episode, because you bring Negan in and he is feeling the vibe and the character of Savior Negan, like, even to the extent of smashing the walker with Lucille too on the way into the meeting, mm-hmm, which I would have expected him to be like, hey, man, I just killed this walker for you, like he did last time. But that's fine. Stella's getting his group back. But I really enjoyed how they handled Christos and the intimidation followed directly by the softening and everyone putting their bullshit to the side. Negan stopped acting. Christos stopped acting. And they just talked like real ass people. And I thought this was some of the best Dead City dialogue and scene work that I have seen yet. It reminded me of that reason we all love Game of Thrones. It's intelligent people in conversations in rooms having intelligent conversations. And I really enjoyed it. And then they killed off Christos. And I'm like, damn it. Like, what the hell?
I know. I'm kind of the same way with you too. Like that was such a great scene.
It was awesome. People just being like having conversations that you expect people to have in a post-apocalyptic world, talking about the situation, the reality, and the gravity that they're in. That was amazing.
But also at the same time, it kind of progressed Negan's character a little bit further too, because as I've been saying since the beginning of this season, this whole thing is an act. It's Negan yes. putting on an act for the sake of his own protection, for his own safety, for his own well-being, but also for his family.
This is for Annie and Joshua. That's what this is for.
Yeah, he's putting on an act. He's putting on a persona. He is not the same Negan. He's just pretending to be when the opportunity arises. And to see that he finds something in common with Christos, in that that's exactly what Christos is doing too, but he's not just doing it for his family. He's doing it for everyone's family that is with him. He has to pretend to be somebody else for all his people, not just himself and his family. And to see him and Negan connect over that and connect in such a way that they both just kind of sense like, okay, we're both bullshitting each other.
Yep,
we know we're both acting. The curtain's going to drop. Yeah, let's be real.
You know what it reminded me of? Honestly, and even the whole way it all went out, the Vatos in season one, when they went back into Atlanta, and the Vatos that were taking care of the nursing home. And just like, you think it's one way, and then you got that person that comes in, and it flips it entirely. And like, I really loved it. I thought Christos had some really good staying power, and I liked what he brought to the show for 20 minutes.
But I do understand them getting rid of Christos, because
for sure.
this whole thing, this whole situation with Christos and Negan dropping their guard and being real with each other, this gives Negan allies. Negan is meant to be a character who's meant to feel on the outskirts and feels kind of like on edge at all time. Mm-hmm. If you give him an ally like Christos and Christos's people, you're kind of taking that away from Negan. You're giving him more protection. He's supposed to feel uneasy. Negan is supposed to feel
too comfortable.
Exactly.
Yep.
So I understand writing wise why they got rid of Christos.
For sure.
It just sucks that they did it.
That's a great way of putting it. You understand it, but it sucks. Speaking of folks with the first name C, let's talk about the Croat this episode. My mans. I don't know what they tried to paint him as in season one, but I'm loving his performance. I'm loving the character. What are you thinking of the Croat so far?
So I love what they've been doing the past couple episodes, in that making him feel unappreciated, making him feel like he's the redheaded stepchild of everything, because it kind of, again, this goes back to a prediction I made earlier on this season, and that when I said I feel like Negan is going to use the Croat and the Dama against each other. And that's exactly what happens this episode.
Played him like fiddles.
He
ironically, rest in peace, Victor.
It takes the Croat coming into that meeting with Christos, going back to Christos for a second, coming in and killing all of them using the methane, but also using Negan as a pawn. So
Negan almost died, and I don't think they played that up well enough. Like, Negan was in that room just as much as Christos was, so they should have put a gas mask on him a lot faster than they did, I thought.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. I'm like you...
Jesus, are you killing him?
You let him get a little too close to death, but
is that just the Croat? Well,
and that's what I think. I think that was the Croat being like, he knows that it's the Dama who's pulling Negan in and showing favor to Negan. That's the Dama doing that. It's not Negan doing it. But I still feel not intimidated. What's the word I'm looking
emboldened?
For? Maybe. Like, I still don't like Negan for it either. Right. Resentment. I still resent Negan for it, even though it's not Negan's fault. So I'll punish him a little bit.
Yep.
And that's like, he lets him inhale that methane a little too long. But that's the Croat's way of, that's his way of dealing with the resentment he has at Negan.
Yep, I like that. I like that. And I thought the way that Negan played him was a little bit too obvious and a little bit too easy. And it surprised me about the Croat, because I think the show wants us to think he's stupid, and I think he's very smart. I really
the Croat.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
I think the show wants us to think he's a hot-headed, belligerent, silly person because he's got a funny accent. But I think he's a lot smarter than the show's been giving us credit for, and I think that's intentional. Like, I don't know. I expect big things from him. I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon.
And here's, again, you've got the glimpse of the future that I don't. But I. The way this episode wraps with Negan actually turning the Croat on the Dama, yeah. I feel like Negan does that intentionally. And I feel like, obviously, one way or another, either way, it works out.
Yeah.
It works out in Negan's favor.
Yep.
If they come to blows and the Dama has the Croat killed, because she's not going to do it herself. She's going to have the Croat kid killed. She's either going to have Negan do it or she's going to have somebody else do it.
Yep.
If that happens, then Negan is now her right hand. Mm-hmm. And he moves up in the ranks. And that works out in Negan's favor. If the Croat kills the Dama, which is what ends up happening, he feels, because he's been above the Croat before, if he was able to influence the Croat to do this, then the Croat is impressionable and he can do that. But I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think Negan is going to have an even harder time now, because the Croat is going to be harder to control.
Oh, okay. So the Joffrey of it all.
I think, because remember, when they initially started talking about the Croat in season one, he said that this guy was so hard to control that they tried to have him killed.
Yep.
Like, they tried to kill him. It was their only way of getting him under control, was to kill him, and even that didn't work. So I feel like without the Dama being that mother-like person that kind of subdues him, you've just unleashed a beast.
But does his obvious adoration, I mean, fanboy to the extreme of Negan, will that make him the ultimate lapdog? Or do you think he's going to come for the top dog? Like, he loves Negan and adores Negan so much and is so beholden to Negan's every whim and need that, like, I don't know. What do you think of that?
I don't think he is as much, though, because remember, okay, let's go back to the whole Christos meeting. If the Croat still had that admiration for Negan, he would not have let him sit in that methane for as long as he did.
He also wouldn't have shown him up in the middle of that meeting.
Yes, I think Croat has lost a little bit of that admiration for Negan.
Okay, I need to hear that. Thank you. That was good.
So I think Negan has unintentionally released a beast. That you've basically kind of how we talked about with Victor, going back to Victor, how music soothes the savage beast. Dama was the music to the Croat.
Yeah.
The music stopped.
Yeah.
And now there's nothing there to keep him under control.
I can't wait to see where it goes from here.
And I think with you throw that element into the fact that Christos's people are gone, and, well, the men are gone. Croat did leave the women and children alive. He didn't kill them, which,
do you believe,
honestly,
him?
Was a worry of mine.
Do you
during
him?
That scene? I do.
I do too. I yeah. do too. I read some things online where people were like, "Yeah, if you believe," I think he does at least look up to Negan enough to know where he crossed the line too hard last time. And, like, that was literally his pet the dog moment of, like, I didn't kill the women and children. I've learned. The soldiers.
And even going to, like, a writer's perspective, if you wanted us to believe that the women and children are dead too, then all you had to do was say nothing.
Yep. That's true. That's a great point.
The fact that they said that he kept the women and children alive is meant to imply, yes, the women and children are, because otherwise we're just going to have assumed they were dead too.
Or they're setting us up for a reveal later of, oh, the Croat actually is an evil bastard. Like, well, they go back to that house and they're all walkers. It's like, damn it. He did kill them.
That's a good point, too.
So who knows? I'm excited to see. I think you're right. I think it was just a, no, I didn't kill the women and children. I think that's where it's going to go from here. But be fascinating to know if his people do show up again. I'm trying to think, is there any, so should we talk about the demise of the Dhamma while we're on this world?
Well, hold on. I just need to finish my point from before.
Please.
I feel like we're setting up an interesting dynamic because, you know, the Dhamma is gone as we're going to discuss in a minute, but you throw that in with the fact that the Croat is probably going to be unleashed. There's nothing there to rein him in, combined with the fact that he no longer has an ally in Christos and his people because they're gone. And Brogul, as I'm going to call him. Brogul very clearly is not siding with these people.
Brogul's on Brogul's side.
Brogul is on Brogul's side. And that's a good way to put it. So there's a lot of combustive elements that are really igniting right now. That as much as I had problems with this episode, I'm really, really, really curious how they're going to wrap up this season with the next three.
And that was how I left this episode. I was very frustrated with how this episode played out. But at the end of the day, I was like, all right, I see the board in front of me and I don't hate that. And then, like, again, knowing a bit of the future, like, we're okay. So it was a very interesting situation.
Yeah, I see the pieces on the board and where they're going. I don't like the path you took to get there.
Yes. Yeah, we meandered for a hard minute and we wasted a whole lot of time finding chocobos. Like, okay. We can do better.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm looking forward to where they're going.
For sure.
Just not crazy. I don't understand why they got off at this off ramp when you could have gone down a little further.
Let's just go into it then. Why is the Dhamma off the board? Why did they take this delightful, psychotic, powerful, intellectual beast off of the board so fast? We got what, 8 episodes with her at the end of the day? Like, she was amazing and she's gone. Why?
We didn't even get 8. We got 5.
Well, we got the last episode of last season.
So 6.
So still, I can't do math. Sorry, guys. Psych major, remember? Why do we waste so much time on the Dhamma when she never mattered, apparently?
So I do have a prediction about this.
Please.
I feel like of all the things that this is going to be affecting, obviously, to get rid of the Dhamma, on one hand, is to release the chaos of the Croat. But I think the bigger reason why you had to take the Dhamma off the board, or the reasoning for taking her off the board, is because of Herschel.
Okay.
I feel like this is going to play into Herschel's story. Something's going to happen where Herschel is going to find out that the Dhamma is dead. And I don't know what exactly it's going to be, but I just have this weird feeling this is going to unlock something within Herschel. Like, he is going to react to this. I don't know how he's going to react to it. I don't know if I'm going to like how he's going to react to it. Because as many people have said, Herschel's story is one of the most intriguing things we've been getting from this season. And I feel like we've only scratched the surface of it. I feel like the Dhamma's death and Herschel finding out, whatever his reaction is to it, is what's really going to hit the accelerator on Herschel's story and where it's going.
I was amazed that Herschel told Maggie about the Dhamma's experience and pull on him, etc. And then the Dhamma died, and I was like, what the hell was any of this for? I am very intrigued to see who, what, how, because by him telling Maggie about the Dhamma, it speaks to me as if he was already giving up on her influence, her piece of it, etc. Now, I think that she dropped the nugget and instructed him that the new world is the world worth saving, but I felt getting rid of her so early really deprives the audience of really good storytelling and good opportunities. Now, I'm going to trust the showrunners, and I'm going to trust that even with her off the board, they know what they're doing. But I'm sad to see her go. I really enjoyed the Dhamma. I thought she was a delightful brand of crazy. But I'm going to trust the showrunners that they know what they're doing. I am.
Okay. I mean, that's totally fair. My biggest fear right now is that somehow they're going to, and I really hope it doesn't happen. And I'm hoping it doesn't. Let's not make Herschel the villain.
I don't think it will. I think he's going to be complicated. I think because of, and honestly, this might even be a credit to Logan Kim. I think he's going to be one of the more complicated characters in Walking Dead history, but it's going to be compelling and it's going to be really, really, really good. I think he's going to be conflicted. And he, as an actor, he's totally got the chops to pull it off.
100%.
And as a character, he has every plot device needed to go down that path. And I think they are kind of telegraphing to us like, hey, this is going to be the story that we follow. And I think he's going to crush it. So I'm very excited for what this is going to do for Herschel / Logan Kim, etc.
Yeah, I'm curious because I know, like, clearly from where we stand at the end of this episode, I know you've already looked ahead, but like at the end of this episode, we're down to two key players now. We have Negan and the Croat, who are now going to probably take over the we'll take over the Dhamma's element of Manhattan. And we have Brogel, who now also has Maggie, Negan, and Pearlie. So, because he's the one that knocks on the door after they kind of get the rest after the whole nature element thing. And we're down to two. We had four in the beginning of this episode.
Yep.
We had four elements. We had the Dhamma, we had Brogel, we had Christos, and we had Roxana.
Yep.
We've eliminated two of them. And, you know, now we're down to two. If we're at a point in the season where they can't introduce another one. Like,
no,
now
hell
we're,
no.
We're with the two that we have now.
Yes.
These are the two elements that are going to be going head to head by the end of this season.
Amen.
And it's now a power dynamic is who's going to be controlling the city. Is it going to be the Croat and Negan? Or is it going to be Brogel?
And New Babylon.
Well, I feel like by getting rid of Lucia, we've kind of eliminated New Babylon from the equation.
I'm intrigued. Because we've never known the structure of New Babylon. Does it stop at governor or is there a president? We don't know the power structure of New Babylon, and I'm fascinated to see. Because I'm not convinced that we've seen the last of their structure in their world.
I mean, in the coming attractions for this week's episode, there is a scene with Brogel and Pearlie talking, and he does say, "I can get you the methane." So Maybe through that, we're going to reestablish New Babylon as to a potential element of this whole thing. But I feel like Pearlie, that's not important to Pearlie anymore.
Okay.
I could be totally wrong.
Okay. I'm excited to find out.
You already know.
I'm excited to find out how things shape up, Ben, because I'm just a guy living in the moment. I'm living in Jeremy Bear me, baby. I'm in the dot of the eye because this timeline this week is all funky.
Got it. There's a lot of elements that are still keeping me hooked in, keeping me interested. But as podcasters, we're not going to stop covering a show halfway through a season.
No,
What is this? Fear the Walking Dead?
Folks, I am still podcasting on the Philadelphia Phillies. They have lost like 11 out of the last 12, and I'm still going to do a show on Thursday. So it's what we signed up for, and we watch 162, so you don't have to. Or at least that's our tagline. So let's talk a little bit about the folks in Central Park. How do you feel about the denouement, the resolution of the New Babylon story? Like, where are you at with all of what happened there? How do we even start that conversation?
The resolution of the New Babylon story, meaning Lucia biting the dust, or not biting the dust, she got bit.
Dust biting her. Just how it all played out. So, all right, Pearlie and Maggie come back, and they're seen immediately as traitors because the Central Park people will not bow to the Death Star. Okay, Navarez is just on power trip to the extreme. And how did you feel about Ginny's heel turn? Like, what went through your mind at that moment that Ginny pulled the gun on Herschel?
I'm still not... I'm still not completely, decided on Ginny.
Okay.
I still don't believe that Negan is the man she is after.
Okay.
When I talked about this a couple episodes back, when she says when Lucia said, like, you're here to kill the man who killed your father, or when Ginny said that to her, like, I'm here to kill the man that killed my father, she never names a name.
I think she wants answers. I think she just wants to know what happened personally. That's my guess, is that she just wants to know why. Because I think she knows her dad was a dick.
Yeah, and I think she looked at Negan as a father figure. For and sure. That's why I think she's here for somebody else. Mm-hmm. She's here for whoever she blames for the assumed death of Negan.
Right.
Not for Negan killing her father. I feel like she looks at Negan as a father figure because he did protect her. He took her in, fixed her dinosaur, all of that. And I just don't know who that person is. It could be the Croat. It could be Pearlie. But she had opportunity to kill Pearlie, so I don't think it's Pearlie.
I think she is a very conflicted 13-year-old kid, and I really like the actress's performance, and I really hope only good things happen to her and she continues, because she's really complicated and really mm-hmm. compelling, and she has said a total of, I think, 16 words on this entire series, but she has been fascinating to follow and watch. I love her. I love her to pieces.
I agree. I mean, and now, you know, by the end of this whole thing with the nature people and Roxana's people, and we have pretty much the four people left who have plot armor, and it's
I wrote that note down, plot armor. That's fantastic.
It's plot armor. I mean, we had all these people in an entire culture of nature people, Roxana, Lucia, all the other New Babylon people that survived and were with them. Everybody's gone except for Maggie, Pearlie, Herschel, and Ginny.
Yep.
Four people with plot armor. They're the people who survived everything.
Add to that Negan, Croat, and Brogel, and that's everybody. That's the entire board after how many episodes now? That's the entire board that we're left with after all the shit we've been through for 13 episodes or however many it's been. That's where we're at.
Yeah, we wiped the Dama off the board. We wiped Roxana off the board.
Christos is gone.
We wiped Lucia off the board.
Yep.
Christos is off the board.
And the governor, all of their people. All of their people
are
also gone. All of the New Babylonians, all of the Christophians, all of the village people, like, they're all gone. It's amazing. How they cleared the board so swiftly in one episode was phenomenal, I guess. I don't know.
But we have to... But we have to remember, too, that we know that there are still people in this city other than these people.
That's
Christos's
true.
People are still alive. The women, the children are still alive. They're going to need protection. which is where I think down the road towards the end of this season, I said it from last season, that at some point, Negan is going to be the king of Manhattan.
I want it so bad. Damn it, Ben. I know there are so many people out there that don't want to see the Lucille swinging Negan, but I think it's such a more compelling character beat for him to struggle with going into savior mode, saving people, doing what needs to be done to save the people that he is supposed to save. Like, I want to see him struggle with that instead of just constantly playing the, oh, I need to be saved, blah, like whatever is going on now. I want him to struggle with the decision of how to be good and save people when he doesn't know how to do both at the same time. Like, that's more compelling storytelling to me.
I do get that, but I'm going to go back to my prediction before, in that I see Negan running Manhattan differently. I see Manhattan being such a big enough place that Negan will consider Manhattan a safe haven. Like, anybody who needs safe haven can come to Manhattan.
It is sanctuary.
It is a different kind of sanctuary, though, from before.
Oh, that's so, like, that's good. I love
Manhattan
that.
Becomes a new sanctuary, but an actual sanctuary.
Oh, no, that's not just a hell.
Not just a sanctuary for his people, for anybody.
And the fascinating thing about Manhattan is all you have to do is go out and clear out the walkers that have developed, and you now have more methane. Like, there's a great reason to kill every walker you come across, because every walker you come across is about to become fuel.
Well, and not only that, but we know that from season one, the walkers that they capture on top of the streets are a small percentage, because they early on put them down in the sewer system.
Yep.
There's almost an endless amount of fuel and zombies. Because what's the population of New York? I mean, it's ridiculous.
I don't know. I would guesstimate a trillion, but I don't know much.
It's not
data.
That high.
I don't know census data, but I'm going to guess 2 trillion then.
Population of New York City currently 8.25 million people.
I was not off by much.
And you figure a small percentage of that are survivors.
True.
So you figure even if 1 million people survived, which we know is not the case, it's probably maybe a couple hundred people survived. You're talking an endless source of fuel, or at least a source of fuel that will last long enough for you to develop another kind of fuel.
Yep.
And reestablish New York City as a sanctuary.
It's exciting to see what's going to happen. What's going to go?
I'm probably speaking totally out of my ass.
No, there's no way of knowing, and you got to give them credit for keeping us guessing. They're doing some stuff with storytelling that is frustrating us, but we are not entirely sure what's happening next, and that is why folks are listening. Well, that and they love listening to our coverage, but also because it's not entirely convinced what's happening next. I think that's good.
There might be listeners out there who are thinking maybe that's making Negan too much of a hero.
Right.
And he doesn't deserve, like, he hasn't earned that because of his past. And you're right. He probably hasn't earned it. I don't know. That might be too hopeful of a thing to think, in that he turns it into something good.
I forgave Ben Linus. I can forgive
me too.
Anyone. I can forgive anyone. If you can forgive Benjamin Linus, you can find it in your heart.
Ben right. Linus didn't have a harem, and
I mean, that's only because such. He was Ben Linus. I mean, if he was built like, you know, Jack, he would have had a harem. Jack had a harem, actually. But that's neither here nor there. Is there anything that we're missing from this episode? Are there any? I feel like I've covered everything I wanted to go over. How about you?
Yeah, it seemed like the discussion was pretty broad, but it not broad in the sense of that we had all these different points to cover. There really were only just a couple points to cover
right
in this episode. I'm looking at my I really haven't looked at my notes at all this
no,
entire
we've just
episode.
Been kind of riffing on it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we have going back to Roxana's death and that whole scene, we do see that Ginny actually is the one that saves Maggie.
Yes.
Maggie is hanging from the noose. She's
just
the chair
like in the
has
comics.
Been kicked out. And Maggie or Ginny is the one that places the chair under her. She saves her. She could have let her die, but she doesn't. So
I don't think she was ever mad at Maggie. I think she just like she never wanted Maggie to die. And I think that's when she realized that by pointing the gun at Herschel, she was sentencing Maggie to die. She had a really big oh shit moment. And that's what made her turn against Nevarez.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that too. We got early on that the Dama wanted to go back on her deal with Negan about bringing, you know, she wanted him to do one thing for Amy and Josh to come in, and now she wants more out of him in order for that deal to come through. Let's see, Lucia knows the truth. Oh, yeah, we didn't talk about that Lucia actually knows the truth that Negan is alive.
And what does that matter, Ben? What does any
Not
of that
a damn
matter?
Thing.
Exactly. That's why I didn't bring it up, because who gives a shit? She is taking that to the grave.
Yeah.
That pissed me off. Who cares?
I mean, because she ends up arresting Pearlie and Maggie to use to bait Negan to come in and save them. And none of that ever happens.
She's the dumbest crook of all time. Like her whole plan. Oh, okay, Maggie, here's what you do. Go to Negan, tell him and the Croat to surrender to us, and then I'll let you free or I'll kill your son. Like, oh my God, that's a terrible plan. That's never going to work. Are you serious? Worst hostage negotiator ever.
You are in a city that is that big where these people have been living.
It's an away game.
If these nature people have shown you anything, the fact that you were willing to come in and take control of them means nothing. It gave her such a false sense of power that she could come in and take over people who were living in nature, not realizing that everybody else out there had methane, had cars, have guns, have power. Like, you thought just because you can control a small little stipend of 20 to 30 like nature crunchy people,
right,
that you could win in New York City?
Unreal.
Like, that is absolutely ridiculous.
Horrible leadership.
It is. God, and the fact that she would think that, like, yeah, go bring Negan to us and we'll have the high ground. No, you won't. You're an idiot.
I thought that character had such an opportunity for complexity, for layers, and the writing never gave it the opportunity. It really didn't. And I wanted so much more from that character, and it never came. And that's a shame, because a lot of people really enjoy the actress, and I wish she would have had more to work with. But what can you do, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, and I want to make that known, too, that all of this talk about her is nothing against Dasha. It's character only. Dasha is an amazing actress. Yes. She can only do so much with what
she's
given.
And you can tell the stage notes on the page, and that Dasha was doing what was on the page. It was just a poorly written character. She acted the hell out of it. She did the best that she could with what she was given. I give the roses for that.
Yeah, exactly. So it was just, you're right. Like, I don't get what the point of that character was.
Nope.
Looking at my notes, there was one element of this episode that confused the hell out of me.
The chuckle has me excited. Go on.
There's the scene where Maggie gets free of everything and then comes back in to find Roxana and Pearlie in the fridge. She opens the door to let them escape. But when Pearlie says, "You're not going to be able to do this alone," she locks them back in the fridge.
Thank God.
Why?
You said something. I did not understand the logic of that scene.
No.
One iota. Like, both times I watched it, like, it was going down and then it happens. I'm like, wait, why? And then it just kept going. And you just accept it for what it is, because it's a fast paced episode. But thank you for saying something, because, yeah, what the hell was the logic behind that?
None. Yeah, I don't know. Like, why did you open the door and tell him to come with you? And then when he turns you down, you lock him in.
Lock him in. Or is it so?
What was the point of that?
I don't know, but God damn it, Maggie.
I don't know.
Killing me.
Let's see. Roxana's death, we talked about. So there are a couple more things. And this is more Negan, Croat, Dama by the end. We see that Negan is trying to appeal to the Croat. Mm-hmm. He's trying to say, why do you let her treat you this way? She's treating you like the redheaded stepchild. Like, you are better than this. Why do you let her step all over you? And like, she treats a fucking rat better than she treats you. And I do feel like this is Negan trying to appeal to the Croat before any drastic measure even has to be taken. And it comes down to the Croat confronting the Dama. Now, I will admit, when I watched that scene where the Croat knocks on the door and she doesn't answer, I thought she was already dead.
Oh, shit.
I thought, like, okay, something happened. She died.
I mean, like, that's fair. Maybe, when there's no answer at the door, you tend to believe that there's no occupants inside.
Well, because my brain went down a different path, because we get that whole confrontation between the Croat and the Dama where he finally confronts her. And he even says that to her, like, you treat a rat better than you treat me. And there's a part of me that looks at her and says, she actually looks heartbroken about all this, that her relationship with the Croat is fractured right now. So there was a part of me that when we get a little bit later, when he goes down and he knocks on her door and there's no answer, I'm like, did she kill herself? Like, was she that broken about all of this? And then the door opens and she's still alive. And then now there's this argument and there is a physical confrontation and she is lit on fire and she burns to death. We do learn something in this scene we have not gotten all series.
What's that? Oh,
the Croat's real name.
Mile. That's a great name. That is a fantastic name, Mile.
And it is actually a very powerful moment.
Yes, it is.
Because she is calling for help, and she's calling him by his actual name. But we've never really heard her address him anyway. Like, we don't know if she calls him the Croat, at least not that I remember.
No, and I feel like the problem with the Dama is we got 73% of a character. We didn't get the last 27%, and I wanted that last 27%. We got close, but we didn't get enough of a character for me to care that much that she's off the board.
Yeah, exactly. I might be wrong about something.
Go on.
I'm looking at the IMDb page for this episode, and it looks like there is actually a character named Mila, M-I-L-A, but I don't remember a character named Mila popping up in this episode at all.
Nor do I. When I think of Mila, I think of Once Upon a Time.
So I don't know.
According to the subtitles, she was calling out Mile.
Mile, yes, because sure. I watched that scene with subtitles as well.
And I kept on thinking, mile. Yes. But it's Mile.
That's how I remembered it.
Yes. Ditto.
So I don't know. Maybe I don't know who Mila is.
It's Adama, and she was extra crispy. So it could just be that last moment of consciousness on Earth. But I'm going to miss her. I am. She was a fun level of batshit crazy.
Mila was the wife of Christos. So Dama was definitely not yelling to her.
Sure.
Mila was his name.
Interesting.
Oh yeah. I'm on the Walking Dead wiki right now.
Nice.
And it lists the Croat as Mila.
All right. There you go.
So she was saying, we were right. It's
our impression was right, folks.
Yes. So it, yeah, she was yelling his actual name.
Some bitch.
And then the only other thing I have left on the note, which was the most choreographed element of this entire episode, Negan killed the rat.
I mean, you can telegraph anything you want, but that obviously I
telegraph, not choreograph. That's
it's okay.
What I was looking for.
Yeah. I was just going to slide it in there, and then you had to correct yourself. It's fine.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. They don't have to insult us. They do not have to show us Negan cleaning his boot. I feel like we're good. We know what happened there, and I felt a little talked down to by showing Negan cleaning out his boot. What did you think of that?
No, I knew when we saw the rat
of
dead.
Of course.
I'm like, okay, yeah.
Obviously, it was Negan.
Because we had a scene. Now, had we not gotten the scene earlier where we saw Negan peeking in and saw her talking to the rat,
yes,
then yes, clearly it would have been like, oh, who killed the rat? It was probably the Croat. No, we got the scene. We see him watching her talking to the rat. And then we get the, she treats a rat better than she treats you. So when we see the rat dead, of course it was Negan. We know that he needs to cause a friction or a fracture between these two characters. That's how he did it. He killed the rat. And it was telegraphed. It was predictable. But you know what? It led to the Dama's death. So
it was still fun. It was a fun episode. At the end of the day, by the time the last credit rolled, I was like, all right, that was a good time. Like,
yeah.
Halfway through, and I'll be honest with you, the second time was better than the first time, because the first time, all I could think about was how much I needed Lucia to die and just get off the board. So the second time I was able to really appreciate the lead up to that.
I know I bitched a lot this episode about the poor writing of that character. Mm. I'm happy she's gone.
Me too. Me too. Good riddance. Time of your life. I hope it's unpredictable. But
the character, not Dasha.
Agreed.
The character.
Agreed. The character had to go. But
the character had to go.
Amen.
So, that's all I have.
I think we nailed it.
For this episode, so
we had some fun with Timeline Madness. We've got an edit and a sneak peek at the end or
an outtake.
Outtake. Thank you. Well done, Ben. We had fun.
Yeah, thank you. This was a good one. Yeah. All right, that's our show, episode 652. Thank you, of course, everybody, for being patient with us to bring you this late coverage of this episode. But thank you, of course, everybody for listening.
Next episode, The Walking Dead, Dead City, season 2, episode 6. Bridge partners are hard to come by these days.
Don't know what that title means yet, but I will find out tomorrow when I watch. If you want to write in or leave us a voice message about the episode, you can find all of our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, please check out our other podcasts, such as Cast of the Rings, who just took listeners on a round trip through Middle Earth, or maybe Murder Magnets as they follow Poker Face.
Nice. And as I said, too, as I kind of teased at the beginning of this episode, The Cast of Us, after we finish tomorrow with episode 6 of Dead City, Karen's going to be coming back for some 28 Days Later coverage. So exciting. Really, really surprised that Jason has never covered the movie before on Podcastica.
He was saving it for the right moment, and this is that moment, and I'm so happy he waited.
While I did say at the beginning the debate about they're not zombie movies, I do love those movies.
They're fantastic.
And I'm really excited for 28 Years Later. So we shall see. All right. That's our show.
Thanks for listening.
Don't get bit, Monica Gallagher. Let's go into the breakdown of this week's episode. The Walking Dead, Dead City, Season 2, Episode 5.
There it is. I was waiting.
No, yep. Wait. Yeah.
No. No.
Wait.
The agenda might be a little wrong.
Yeah, the agenda's wrong. Sorry. Hold on.
Season 2, Episode 6, Something About Birds.
Wait, what?
This episode has something to do with birds. Hold on. The bird always knows. This is season two, episode, I think.
It's five. It's episode five.
But yeah. It is the bird always knows.
It's the bird always knows.
The bird always knows.
So, hold on. I'm actually going to edit this part out.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Let me make a note where we're at here. This, I can't leave this in. This is just too much of a mess.
That's a bridge too far.
This is just too much of a mess. All right.
Okay.
All right. Let me do this again. Hold on. Jesus, we're a fucking mess tonight.
We're having fun tonight. All right?
I know.
That's all. All right.
What is it? The bird always knows.
The bird always knows.
Okay. All right.
But it is episode five, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
All right. So,
don't you deserve a Medicare plan you can count on? Well, you can count on a Medicare Advantage plan from United Healthcare. Enjoy reliable coverage and low out-of-pocket costs with a Medicare Advantage plan from United Healthcare. And if you have a chronic condition like diabetes, chronic heart failure, or a cardiovascular disorder, you may qualify for a United Healthcare Complete Care plan with plans that fit your life today and as your needs change tomorrow. Find out more about United Healthcare plans at uhc.com/Medicare.